Okay, let's start. So I'm stealing a few minutes to thank you all for coming to this very interesting conference. And so I think today was a very nice example of jumping from AU scales to cosmological scales, and basically link those scales by the importance of feedback in our methodology. And so I really enjoyed this jumping back and forth between star scales and galactic scales. I think I personally learned a lot. So I would like to thank, of course, my fellow organizer to help me and organize this conference. And I would like to thank you for coming. So a lot of people have already left, sadly, but I think we had a lot of very good speakers among the world experts in the field. So I think it was a great conference. So I would also like to thank Jesse, who helped us a lot. Okay, thanks a lot. And so for those of you who are staying next week, we see you next Monday. And we're going to start a very important, very interesting interaction on this topic, feedback, star and galaxy formation. So I'm going to stop talking now. So thanks a lot to everyone, and see you soon.
Okay, so we will continue with the program. We will have Shai Genel talking about the Illustra simulations.
Thank you, Laura. Thanks to everyone who stayed to listen. So I'm going to tell you about today, about work we've been doing at the ITC in the last something like 3 years. So the main people involved in the project, which is called the Illustris project, are people at Lars Sternquist's group at the ITC. In particular, people Deborah Siachki, Mark Fogersberger, Paul Torrey have contributed a lot, and we're working also in close collaboration with Volker Springel at HEAT. So just a very short motivation, of course, because this is the last session of the meeting. So we know that without feedback, galaxies are too massive on all scales. And basically, this is a plot of the stellar mass versus halo mass that one obtains in simulations that don't really have feedback. The dashed green line here would show basically the cosmic baryon fraction for these halos. So this would be the relation if all baryons associated with halos would turn into stars. These two lines here show what you actually get in simulations by Dushan from a few years back without feedback. The blue line is our simulations with Vanina SPH, with Gadget, and the red line are simulations with Arepo. So you can see some code differences. But basically, you get that almost all the baryons turn into stars if you don't use feedback. Now, of course, now these are two plots of the stellar mass function at redshift zero from this recent paper and a little bit older paper. And of course, I should add Yoke's plot once their results are out, which gives much better agreement with observations. But basically, what you see here are the error bars are the observations, and here the black line are observations, and the other lines are simulations. So basically, hydrodynamical simulations that added feedback and did not try to tune the feedback specifically to form that, to reproduce stellar mass function, don't really do it. On the other hand, semi-analytical models can do it very well, and now we just heard that hydro simulations, modern ones, can do that too. So the question is, of course, now in semi-analytical models, they have much more freedom in tuning their various feedback parameters to specifically get that. So the question is, can we get that and more generally form realistic galaxies in lambda CDM using feedback? Another slide of introduction, which was shown by Volker earlier this week. So these are stellar images from the Aquila code comparison project, where different codes, different techniques for hydrodynamics, gravity, and feedback were used with the same initial conditions. And You see a pair of images for each of those simulations, face on and edge on. You can see, first of all, how different codes and specifically different feedback implementations give you completely different results with the same initial conditions, basically telling you that hydrodynamical simulations are not yet have constraining power or predictive power. The second point, and none of them was realistic or a realistic disk galaxy in the sense, if you consider even just two simple measurements, one is the stellar mass, and second is basically the angular momentum or the flatness of the system. None of them looked like the Milky Way in both of these measures. But the question is, of course, when you zoom in on one specific halo, is that you don't know what the true answer should be. Maybe this should not look like the Milky Way. So even that hydrodynamical simulations, cosmological simulations at this point are not really predictive, and we have to fiddle with the feedback to get to match to observations. Another important point is that we the very step of comparing to observations is not trivial. So we need large populations of galaxies to be able to actually know the right answer to which that our simulations should match. Okay, so this is the context in which we started the Illustris project, which actually has, I believe, a very similar approach to the Eagle project that Yoav talked about. So we're simulating a cosmological volume of 100 megaparsec on a side, and we wanted to achieve a baryonic resolution so that first we can barely resolve the ISM, a point that Yoav mentioned, and also basically to get convergent results and basically be able to start resolving galactic structure. That means that for, say, Milky Way-like galaxies, we would like to resolve with tens of thousands of resolution elements. That forces us to go to a baryonic mass resolution of about 10 to the 6th. These two constraints combined mean that we have to use a very large number of resolution elements. In this case, we used 1820 cube, both for hydrodynamic resolution elements and for dark matter. Now, the simulation box is evolved with a moving mesh code, a repo, plus a set of galaxy formation physics that I will describe in more detail just in a minute. The gravitational softening that we have, or the spatial resolution, is around the co-moving kiloparsec. We use WMAP cosmology, and with this volume, it's worth mentioning that we start probing into the cluster regime, so we have 10 halos more massive than 10 to the 14, and a large sample around 1,000, depending on how you count exactly, of Milky Way-like halos of around 10 to the 12. That allows us to start, being able to cut the galaxy population in more complex parameter spaces to compare to observations. So I should also mention that such a massive calculation is really the state of the art, and specifically in the sense that we cannot really do this multiple times yet. So this calculation took around 20 million CPU hours, which means running on 8,000 cores for 9 months, almost nonstop. So it's really the most that we can do at the moment. So what is the physics that we have in the simulation, or the feedback? So specifically, there are two regimes of feedback: galactic winds, important for the small, for low mass galaxies, the main topic of this meeting, and black holes, more important for more massive halos. I'll go quite briefly to describe these. So the galactic winds basically follow the Spring and Hernquist 2003. Prescription that is very widely used and adopted here for our repo. So these are kinetic winds. That means that star-forming gas is getting velocity kicks in proportion to its with a probability that is proportional to its star formation rate. The magnitude of those velocity kicks scale with the local potential local potential depth. Specifically, we use the local velocity dispersion of dark matter. So not a global halo property, but a local measure of the velocity dispersion or the potential well. Such that the kick velocity is roughly the escape velocity. expected for this velocity dispersion, slightly below that. Now, once we fix the velocity and we fix the energy that we put in based on the star formation rate, that energy being 1.1 times 10 to the 51 ergs per supernova. So, do you see Alison here? Or here you go. Ah, there. So, in our earlier paper that we put out last year, where we describe the physics models, we actually said that we were using 3 times 10 to the 51, hence the 300% that Alison presented. So that's completely fair. We just made an algebraic mistake. A bit embarrassing, but we are actually using this number, so 100%, not more than that. Sorry? Yeah. So once we fix the energy and we fix the velocity, that means that the mass loading factors of the wind, so the outflow rate with respect to the star formation rate in the galaxy, has a particular scaling, with V to the minus 2. That means that lower mass galaxies or galaxies in lower mass halos have higher mass loading factors. Specifically, this energy scaling is required to get the slope of the faint end slope of the, or the low mass end slope of the galaxy stellar mass function. I'll show this in a moment. These winds are hydrodynamically decoupled for a short time to allow them to escape the dense ISM, and then a few kiloparsecs above the galactic disk, they are coupled back to the hydrodynamics. What this plot shows is the mass loading factor of the wind as a function of the halo mass in which the galaxy lives at 2 redshifts. So I hope you can see the values here. This is 1. This is a mass loading factor of 10. This is a mass loading factor of 100. So these are really huge mass loading factors. And I think this might be a problem in comparison to observations. I've never heard of an observer that talks about a mass loading factor of 100. Still, this is what we need in 10 to the 10 solar mass halos to obtain reasonable galaxy masses. So possibly we are missing some other form of feedback that forces us to use such mass loading factors. I think this is one first challenge that I want to note. On the other side, we have the black hole feedback. I'm not going to go into much detail. Basically, we have 3 different modes: quasar mode, radio mode, and the radiation proximity mode for the AGN feedback. The most important one in suppressing the stellar masses for very mass, high mass halos is the radio mode, where we inject thermal bubbles into the gas halo, which then expand and actually do some real PDV work on the gas. You can see examples here in kind of a mock X-ray image and metallicity. So you can see these new injected bubbles and some relic bubble in metallicity that really took the gas out from the inner halo and pushes gas out. Okay, so with these feedback parameters, with these feedback processes, we have roughly 15 tunable parameters. They all have physical meaning, and you know, we maybe know kind of the ballpark that they should have, but they are really, you know, kind of free parameters to within a factor of few. So we played with the values of these parameters. Of course, on smaller volume, lower resolution simulations, we couldn't do that very systematically, because even the test simulations are expensive. But so we kind of did it by hand and tried to reproduce 2 basic things: the stellar mass halo mass relation at redshift 0, and the cosmic star formation rate density across cosmic time. And we did not even get a perfect match to these observations. So even with these 15 parameters, at least with the not sophisticated way we could scan the parameter space, it was hard for us even to get these 2. So I don't think the model has a lot of freedom. I think it's interesting that Joop talked about many possibilities to match the stellar mass function. I think we should be looking into this together. Just a quick overview of what the feedback looks like. We have a small part of the box, 5 megaparsec, co-moving megaparsec on the side, showing gas temperature, density, and metallicity. redshift is here, you can see that the high redshift where galactic winds mostly operate, the metallicity is confined to where you have stars. So the galactic winds themselves don't push gas very far out because we basically use roughly the escape velocity for the galactic winds. But at lower redshift, you start seeing these explosions in the temperature map mostly, and also in metallicity. This is the AGN feedback that really pushes gas further out, suppresses star formation in this very massive system here, and also really enriches the intergalactic medium to large distances. Sorry? The scale is 5 co-moving megaparsec. OK. So some results. First of all, the growth of galaxies in this box. So here we see the star formation density history as a function of redshift. Observations are these brown dots here, and the total star formation rate density in clusters is this black line with the shaded regions showing some estimate of the cosmic variance on this scale. So you can see it's not the cosmic variance is not huge on a 100 megaparsec box, but it's also not completely negligible. Also, when you compare it to mass functions, so basically we would like to go to even higher volumes in principle to make a fair comparison to observations. Maybe the most important thing here, so you see that at low redshift, we still overestimate the cosmic star formation density by maybe a factor or two or so. And this comes mostly from halos of 10 to the 12. So these different color lines show the breakup of this black line into contributions from different halo masses. So mostly, we are still not suppressing enough the star formation rate around the knee, 10 to the 12 solar mass halos. What this shows is the star formation rate versus redshift for three different halo mass beams, where the results from the illustris are the symbols, and the solid lines show an empirical estimate coming from a recent paper by Baruzzi. We see in general the trend looks actually really surprisingly well, I think. But the most discrepant part is below redshift 1 or redshift 0.1, where you see illustris for 10 to the 12 solar mass halos and 10 to the 12 and 10 to the 11 solar mass halos is about a factor 2 above what's estimated from the real universe. So this is the mass scale where we're still not quenching enough. So most of the quenching comes in our simulation from the AGN feedback at higher masses, where the galactic winds are most are the dominant feedback mechanism in 10 to the 12 and below solar mass halos. They don't really provide any quenching at low time. So I think this is one challenge that remains. Simulations where we can compare large galaxy populations to really a large number of very distinct observations and